Welcome back, everyone, to the final episode of 2024 of the She's Electric podcast presented by Hyundai. Today, we've got a big one. This is one I was really driving for because she drives so hard for our sport. It's Jessie Marley-Dyer. She is joining us and we get to learn all about her stories, her time on tour, and now her time as a different career as the WSL commissioner, the first female WSL commissioner as well. She does so much for us, so we needed to get her on to have a chat. Tune in and enjoy, everyone. Let's get into it, Jessie. Welcome to the show. I was really pushing to have you on here. I really wanted to get you on the show because, in my opinion, I would say that you are the leading pioneer of women's surfing. And
oh, cool.
I think all of us should be so grateful to have you in charge and pushing and driving the sport. So I just wanted to say a big thank you for coming on to the show.
Oh, thanks, Jess. Of course. And I saw it. I was like, I want to support you. So I'm happy that you wanted me on.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I was talking earlier and I was like, I feel like Jessie is the lady that never sleeps in this sport. The sport is off. It's off season. It is never off season for you. You said you're in LA. What are you doing over there right now?
So we're pretty deep in planning, you know, for the preseason. You know, we always joke about things having like an off season, but you know, that it never really is the off season. Obviously headquarters are here in LA. So, being here in LA right now is important just to kind of go through and get ready for next year. Well, not only next year, but also like all of the years to come. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely have been guilty of having a little bit too much energy, I would say. I'm not one of those people that's really like great at relaxing. I try to be better at it, but I've also just kind of given up. So maybe another life.
There's nothing wrong with a bit of energy. How I like to start the episodes is to kind of get to know you a little bit more, and I ask like completely non-surf related questions so that the audience by the end of this 45 minutes can walk away and be like, yeah, Jessie's my friend. This is all good. Like, let's go hang out. So I'm going to just do like 3 or 4 rapid fire questions just to get to know you a little bit more personally. So you ready for the first one?
Awesome. Yes, ready.
Okay. If you were told you can only listen to 3 songs on repeat for the rest of your life, what would they be?
I think that number one, I mean, this is really embarrassing, but my like pre-heat song for a really long time when I was competing, which is obviously a very long time ago, was an old Kylie Minogue song, Hand on Your Heart.
I loved it.
Like everyone else is sitting there listening to like, I don't know, like Eminem or something. And I had this like ridiculous 80s, early 90s disco that reminded me of when I was a kid. I think it was like one of the first albums that I had, like the first CDs, not that anyone knows what they are anymore either. So it's definitely that. I used to listen to like a lot of Jesse McCartney just to really annoy Steph Gilmore. I would put him on there because it used to drive her insane. And then it's got to be something from Taylor Swift, which is also really embarrassing, but I don't pretend to be cool in this world. So I'd have to go. I went to Taylor Swift when she was in Australia and she was awesome. And also my sister would be really mad.
Hands. I love it. You're a little Swifty.
Yeah. I'm really cool. So
you are. I actually think you are. So you're so cool. Let's run with that. Next question I've got for you. Love the playlist, by the way. Next question. Last ever meal, entree, main, dessert. What are we having?
I definitely go like sushi for sure. Dessert, I think maybe like some kind of like a banana cake or like an apple pie. Like I'm more in the fruit, not chocolate. Yeah. And God, entree, I don't know. I mean, maybe something like a calamari style.
Okay.
Something like that. So yeah, these are weird choices. Lover. Also, nothing of that really went. Oh, yeah, I was about to be like, nothing really went together, but I guess I could claim the seafood.
I'll be having some fish followed up with some fruit and sweetness. I love it. We'll take it. I like it. Every single person I've asked has been so polar opposite. So this is why I like to do it, because you can kind of get to know you a little bit better and like your little idiosyncrasies and stuff. Last question I have for you, and I can give you an example of mine. So what's your guilty pleasure? So for me,
every time I go to an airport or before I get on a plane, the little Hershey's cookies and cream bar, I have to have one. Like, I just, it's just rather pretty like ritual. It'll work for me now, but I feel like as I get older and I start catching more planes, I'm probably going to have to like slow it down, pump the brakes a little bit, then I'll get what's your guilty pleasure.
I think mine is buying coffee and like
yes.
the inability to walk past a coffee shop without being like, I think I need a coffee. Like, you know, it's definitely that for sure.
How many coffees a day are we talking?
I try to really only drink in the morning, to be honest, because I'll drink one really strong coffee and then I'm like, well, you need another one just because you need another one. And then, but once I get in that the early afternoon is the danger zone for me, because that's when I start thinking, especially I drink a lot of like really strong Piccolos and they're so small that I'm like, yeah. that's a fake coffee. Whereas in reality, it still has the same amount of caffeine. And everyone around me is like, maybe you don't need that.
Maybe let's go to a Long Black or something like that, a little bit more substance to it.
No, everyone's like, water, anything that's not caffeine, you do not need anymore. But that's definitely, yeah. I've actually started trying to drink matcha a little bit.
Oh, I'm a huge matcha fan, massive. Jump on that train. Yeah. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah. I think it's probably better for my caffeine intake and just,
yeah.
you know, I still get to walk past the coffee shop and still go inside.
Get to have a little guilty pleasure. Well, I've loved getting to know a little bit more about you on a personal level. Now, let's start with your life journey. I always start at the very beginning. And you are a Sydney girl, quite like me. We both grew up in Sydney. Talk to me about Bronte, growing up there, childhood, early days in school. How was it for you?
I spent so much time at Bronte Beach when I was a kid and at the surf club. Had a couple of friends and we just spent all day down there. Everyone who's from Bronte loves Bronte, but there's like this little tiny, there's a little shore break in there that's the bunker. It's a left-hander. It's maybe, you know, it's like my favorite wave, but it's probably one of the worst waves in Australia. Like for sure. I spent all my time surfing there, trying to like get the boys to take the flags down and just really just hanging out in that beach. Like our friend and her family owned like the fish and chip shop. We're all members of Bronte Surf Club. So we just like roamed around Bronte from, you know, and my mum or my dad would come and pick me up when it was like dark, you know. So we spent all day down there in summer and it was awesome. Like we were all, you know, we competed in Bronte Surf Club and we like, you know, we're all doing like, you know, I had a friend who was in the winter swimming club. So we'd go down there. It was very social, you know, and Bronte's a really small beach. So everyone kind of knows each other / it's small enough for my mum to have been able to call, you know, once she called the lifeguards because there was lightning and she was like, make sure she gets out of the water, you know? So it's like one of those little beaches, but it was great. I didn't go to school in the eastern suburbs. Like I had gone to school in the city from about year five or mm-hmm. like, you know, pushing into the city. So I had like a whole bunch of different friend groups, which was great for me because I spent, you know, so much time in doing sports and, you know, hanging out with mates at Bronte. And then I had these other friends at school and it was a nice way to feel like I kind of knew, like not knew everyone, but I feel like I had a place in all these different kind of worlds in Sydney. So it was good.
How was school for you? Was it a fun experience? Because I didn't get to talk to many people who went to school in the city. I grew up on the coast, similar, but the other side of the Harbour Bridge. And, you know, the community I grew up with, we surfed together. Yeah. Little note. But, how was that? Would have been such a unique experience to go to school in the city, have like all these kind of city life, and then come back to the coast and hang out with all your mates down at the beach.
It was great. Like I had gone to Sydney Girls High, which is academically selective. So I had this other outlet and my mum and dad really encouraged me to kind of have that other outlet. I think, you know, partly because of the amount of energy that I had for sure. But also I had all of these great friends who had these really interesting like lives and they had, you know, come from all different places in the world. So, you know, my school has a as has like probably the worst uniform going in Sydney in terms of like the colours, but it was great to be in there. And you know, that the one thing I will say about Sydney Girls High too is that it was very like you can do anything, very kind of social justice real focus on like the things that the school talked about. And I mean, we would always laugh, and I look back now and laugh about it because we used to have like politicians come to the school and talk to us. So we'd be like, we can't even vote. But it was always, you know, it was a really interesting environment to grow up in. And yeah, I always enjoyed going to school. You know, I enjoyed having that kind of outlet. And I think that, you know, being able to have two things was probably good for me to feel like I had, you know, not as much pressure on me when I was thinking about trying to become a pro surfer, because I felt like, well, if I have this other option too, then, you know, not everything's in that one basket. You know, it can feel a bit overwhelming, I reckon, you know, when you're first trying to make it and first starting to do the tour and starting to travel and stuff. It can be, you know, it's really different to probably what you were doing even 18 months before, you know, as a high school student. So it was nice for me to be doing different things and to feel like I didn't have all of that pressure just on the one thing. And something quite peculiar. Something
shimmering that I despite your destiny. Ever tried a road trip like this? Under the Milky Way. Now you can.
Well, let's talk about surfing. I want to go back to the start again. I just love that first feeling of like, oh my gosh, I love this, or oh my gosh, I can do this. Take me back to young Jesse at Bronte. Who's pushing you into your first waves and who's the community around you right now?
You know, I surfed a lot with my dad when I was a kid. My mum had taught me to swim when I was probably about 3. So, you know, like I had been in the water all my life. My auntie also owns the surf school at Bondi. So we spent all of our time as a family, you know, like in there, I was in there, you know, taking boards off my aunt and, you know, making my dad come out and surf with me and things like that. I think being able to swim from such a young age, but also just, I also competed in the pool. So I was always like always doing something in the water. And I think that kind of, background also probably gave my parents a fair bit of confidence that I was okay to be down the beach by myself, or that I was all right, you know, if I lost my board or something, then I'd be able to come back in. I think probably at one stage we had roped the whole of Bronte Surf Club and everyone that we'd ever known into coming surfing with us. But I think I was probably 10 or 11 when I was 11 when I've got my first fiberglass board. It was like this super cool Dahlberg with flames all down the side.
Oh my God. Sick.
I thought it was the best thing ever. Yeah, I got it for Christmas and I was just like, it was actually a hand-me-down from my aunt. And I thought I was like, it was, you know what it's like when you're getting a board and it's like the paint job and stuff, it's always such a big deal. Like when I got my first custom board, I didn't paint it, obviously, because I have no creativity like that. But I had copied a design from Wendy Botha because I had this little book of her, and on the front they had like flipped her and she was a goofy footer.
Oh,
and
no,
so it wasn't
way.
Until I got older that I didn't even know that she wasn't a goofy, that she was a natural. But I took this board that she had and I copied the spray. I think I told her a couple of years ago, she's laughing at me, but I was like, yeah, I thought it was the best ever. So that was kind of me. But yeah, I mean, we spent all our time at the beach or the pool or an ocean pool as a kid. So there's a bit of everything.
It sounded like you came from like a really cool little community at Bronte. Like it almost seems like a family kind of community with it being a small town and all of you down the beach and your family trusting everyone around you to look out for you. Like you mentioned the lifeguards. Who kind of, or when was it that you were like, all right, maybe I'll take this a little bit more seriously. Maybe I'll try and compete, throw my hat in the ring a couple of times. Was it your dad, or was there more of a community member that really pushed you to be like, hey, you could actually do this?
So my dad found a contest for me to go in, and I didn't really know a lot of girls who surfed. We ended up, Nicola Appleton comes from Bronte as well. So, you know, she was also there. I think it was just before kind of she was really getting into surfing, but dad found a contest for me. It was the All Girls Surf Showdown in Lennox. And so we drove up there, and I had met Rebecca Woods in the surf in Copacabana like that year. And I had, didn't really know anyone else who surfed. But I also kind of around that time, you know, because I was competing in all these other different events and different sports, I started training with Martin Dunn as well, to try and get some of the basics of technique down and, you know, kind of meet a few other girls and things that surfed. So we went up to the All Girls without really knowing anybody. And I really remember feeling like, oh, okay, there's other girls like me in a way, you know, like, because I'm going to age myself, but this is before like Roxy really existed, and or Roxy may have just started. Like, I really vividly remember getting my first pair of board shorts from Roxy. My aunt brought them back from America. And I was like, oh, wow, like this is like, you know, a thing. So going up to the All Girls and getting to meet other girls who surfed was a really big deal. And I really felt like there was, you know, community in those events for sure. And that was kind of where I was like, okay, I'd like to compete more. You know, I don't know if we'll go anywhere, but it'll be fun.
How'd you go on the All Girls?
Good. I won the under 14s.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, but this is like beach starts. It was like back in the day we had to start on the beach. You know,
was it a priority? It was like the boy, you got to paddle out to the boy?
No, but I wish there was. It would just, I still laugh about beach starts because I'm like, why did we do that? Like at the, like for me coming from swimming, it was great, but I was like, why did we start on the beach? Like, why did no one be like, maybe we could start in the water? But that's how old I am that we started on the beach. And it was pretty, I just remember that contest of being so cool, and like everybody, there were so many women who ran it. There were so many women involved in organizing, and I was like, yeah, this is, it was like, yeah, there were girls that I met there that I like knew forevermore, which is the funniest thing. Like when you look back at some of the photos, I'm like, oh my God, look at everyone.
Do you still stay in touch from any of those girls from those younger days? Like, did you have like a traveling partner that kind of went with you from, you know, the All Girls at Lennox to the QSs and the tour with you?
I think in terms of like someone that I knew from the very start, like we didn't always travel together, but Rebecca Woods was the first girl that I ever knew who surfed. And she, like apart from my own family, and then, you know, we would see each other at training, and then we'd see each other at these contests, and then we ended up being on the CT together, which we kind of still laugh at because, you know, the fact that there was this, I feel like at the time though, there was this whole group of us that all came through together. There were people like Lauren McGregor, who was, you know, really good at, she was winning everything. It was like baby Steph Gilmore, Karina Petroni, you know, like it was very, it was like, I'm definitely aging myself, but it was hilarious when you think about the people that they were there, and you know, the people who are still involved, and you know, a lot of people even are still involved in the industry, you know, even if they're not competing professionally anymore.
Tell me about, I want to talk about 2006. It was your first year on tour. It was an absolutely incredible year for you. You were winning at Honolulu Bay, which is, in my opinion, one of the best events. I thought that was awesome, like such a hand-in-hand wave for women's graceful surfing and power. So you won there. You got fourth in the world and you got Rookie of the Year. You even beat Lane Beachley, Kiala Kennelly in that year. It was kind of like guns blazing in 2006. That just seemed like it would have been the best year.
It was good. Like it was 2006. And like my rookie year was interesting for me because the beginning of the year I did really badly on the CT, and I was so frustrated because I was like, you know, I, you know, you, I'd worked so hard to get to the CT and it was where I'd wanted to be for so long. And I was like, oh my God, I'm finally got here and I'm gonna be off, you know? And to be honest, I was a bit like, oh, this is awful. Like, you know, like you've done everything to get there. We went to these amazing places like Fiji and Tahiti and I did badly. And I was so annoyed. And I was being coached at the time by Kate Wilcombs, who was like, you just need to kind of relax a bit. But I was like, no, like that fear of, I think the fear of failure is a bit too hard, but like not wanting to fail. I think a lot of really competitive people definitely have kind of been there. And it took a bit of work, honestly, with me with a sports psychologist to really pull myself out of it. And I came into, you know, the back half of the year and did well in South America. I had also broken my nose. So I think I had like something I wasn't, almost in some ways it was like because I had smashed my face in, I wasn't focusing as much on the fact that I wasn't doing well, you know, like so I came into South America and an event in Brazil actually and broke my nose free surfing before it and did well there and then kind of built into Honolulu, which was, you know, for sure it's the biggest win of my career. Like, and Honolulu is so nerve-wracking because you sit in that bay and it's quite, you know, long in between sets. It's always those long period swells and you can hear, you know, I still remember that there was like a set coming in the back half of that. No, actually in the final minutes of that heat, there was a set. And you have to pick whatever wave you're going to catch. Everyone's on their horn on the out of cars on the cliff. And Steph Gilmore was caddying for me. And I picked the wrong wave, like 100% made a huge mistake in the end of that heat. And I flicked off and I just remember like I turned around and Keala Kenley was in this barrel on the wave behind. And I looked at Steph and she looked at me. We were both like, oh my God, like I thought I'd just like, that was it. And she ended up like falling or had closed out on her. But I really thought that was like, that was the ultimate error of my career. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I've just done that. But, It was, you know, coming at the end of the season, I definitely didn't think that, like, I didn't expect to win that event. The surf was really big. Like, the surf was huge the first day. It was still really sizey the second. I hadn't really surfed Honolulu a lot, but I felt like it was a wave that I really kind of gelled with, you know? It's one of those beautiful waves where you look at it and you're just, like, kind of mesmerized. And I'd never... You know, I never really had those kind of connections with waves all the time, you know, like there's places that I love, but I'm like, sometimes I didn't love you back. But this one, I felt like I felt like we understood each other a bit.
This episode of the She's Electric podcast is proudly brought to you by Hyundai, Australia's trusted and leading car brand. Whether you're heading to your favorite surf spot or exploring new breaks, Hyundai has the perfect vehicle for every adventure. With the stylish Tucson, the tough Santa Fe Hybrid, and the all-electric Kona, Hyundai ensures you've got the wheels and the accessories to get you from wherever you are to the beach with ease. As major partners of Surfing Oz since 2018, Hyundai are supporting the sport at all levels, championing equality and driving real change. Check out the full range of vehicles at hyundai.com.au or head to your nearest dealer today.
Yeah, I feel like it's interesting you say that because I feel like that's a consistent even now to the day I'm, as you know, quite good friends with Molly and I'll usually chat to her and she'll be like, I love this wave, but this wave doesn't love me. Like she'll, and I'm like, it's all right, like just work with it. You know, you end up finding your groove. I feel like you and Hawaii just had an incredible connection though. You had a lot of your best career results there. Was there any other place around or any other event that you're like, okay, I'm clicking, like you may not have got the win but you just felt like you're in really good flow or rhythm with that part of the world?
I always did well in Hawaii. I did well in Sunset. I feel like South America I always did well in. Like the only other events I ever won were in like Peru and Brazil. So I had these kind of two really opposing kind of places that I felt so comfortable in. And I say they're opposing because, like, you know, we would go to, you know, Brazil, and I won a contest in Rio, and it's not like you're getting huge waves in Rio, but I always felt at home in Rio, and I always felt like I did well in Brazil. There's something about the people in Brazil, I think, kind of remind me of people in the beach in Sydney. You know, everyone's just there having a great time, like living their life on the beach. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think in terms of places that I loved and never loved me back, is definitely was like Fiji. Okay. For sure.
I feel like a lot of people would feel that way.
I'm still annoyed about losing those heats, and I'm just like, you know, you got to get over it. It was a long time ago. Talking about 2006.
I feel like when I first grasped surfing and competitive surfing, it would have been your last couple years on tour. And I just remember being like, wow, like that is so cool. And it's so cool to see women at these amazing waves. You left tour in 2011. Was it a bittersweet feeling for you? Did you feel like you were ready to leave tour in that time?
You know, I had this little voice in the back of my head, and I had been thinking about, you know, how long I would be on tour for and things like that. And the biggest kind of the biggest test for me was when I didn't requalify. I kind of came close on the QS to get the seed back for the CT. And when I didn't requalify, I wasn't upset, and I gave myself the chance to be upset. And I was like, oh God, I think that might be it for you. And more because I was like, I don't know, like I had been through my career and been so competitive, like, and so annoyed. Like, I actually went through a phase where I was a terrible, like, tantrum thrower. Like I almost threw a board off the cliff once at Honolulu. Like, I was the worst, like really bad, which is also why I spent a lot of time with sports psychologists, because I was like, I can't do that. Like, this, you can't do these things. Yeah, like I was that person that was throwing surfboards and stuff when I lost. So for me to then lose my place on the CT after 6 years and not feel upset was a huge red flag for me. I was like, oh, yeah, really? That could be, like, it could be time for you to walk away. And I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, but at the time, you know, the position of women's tour manager at the then ASP was vacant, and I didn't think that it was an option for them to fill it. But at the end of the season in December, so like a couple of months had gone past, and then they, ASP and Brody Carr had approached me about, you know, maybe working for the ASP, which I wasn't thinking that was going to be like a thing for me. I was probably going to go to uni full time and do maybe some of the Australian events, you know, like on the qualifying series and see how I go. But I wasn't like thinking that, you know, I was going to really put like 100% into surfing. I felt like it was the beginning of me, you know, retiring. And I think too, there's always like a little voice. I'd been thinking about it for that whole year, you know, been thinking about retiring. And I still, you know, remember when I did walk away, a lot of people were like, really? Like, you know, I think I was 25 or 26. So I was relatively young, and a lot of crew were like, well, why would you walk away now? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I had had a really bad injury the year before. I had done my ACL. And in having that injury and spending a bit of time out of the water and away from the tour, I kind of had the chance to think about what, you know, what my life might be like if I wasn't traveling all the time and I wasn't competing professionally. And it kind of also, in a weird way, it gave me the chance to realize that I'd be okay if I wasn't competing. And so when, you know, I lost my place the next year, it felt like, yeah, that would be it. And I've never regretted it at all. Like, I've actually never put on a jersey again.
No.
That can never, ever. And I went fully cold turkey, which is also quite extreme, but it worked for me. And, you know, I'll always be like a really competitive person, but I've found different ways to kind of flex on that instead of, you know, having myself be competing for things. And, you know, kind of just, it can be frustrating when you're not doing well and stuff like that. And, you know, when it gets really frustrating, I was like, oh, I've got to pull the plug. Otherwise, I'm going to really just drive myself into the ground.
Yeah. I feel like even talking from the start, I feel like Sydney girls, the community you grew up with in Bronte, and then your life on tour, and then all these lessons that you would have learned on tour and these experiences you would have had as a woman on tour probably led you into Jessie Miley Dyer, this absolute powerhouse that is just driving not just women surfing, but just surfing in general. Do you feel like all the lessons you learned from that part of your life has really kind of set you up to start this new phase of your career, which would have been the women's tour manager? Or did you go straight into that?
Yeah, I definitely do. Like, I'd had, you know, at the time when I was competing as well, I'd been the surfer rep for the women on the ASP board, and there had been a lot of back and forth, and I had managed to get like a directorship back for the women. So I, at the time, I also held a vote, which I thought was important for the women to have. But I think that, like, you know, my family, everyone in my family, my mum and my dad's side, were all really strong personalities, and they had really taught me and encouraged more than anything that I should advocate for the things that I believed in, you know, because it can be quite challenging when you're competing to, you know, step in those rooms and, you know, be like, I don't like this and I think this could be better. Like, I see, you know, it can be tricky. And, you know, at the time for me, my major sponsor was in the room when I was there advocating against things that they wanted on behalf of the tour. And, you know, I found for myself, it was like, it was going to take more energy for me to kind of push that part of myself down and not say anything than it would to be like, hey, you know what? I think that this is, you know, it's important that we're like at least considering these things. So it was, that was like a really unique kind of perspective and set of experiences that I'd had, I guess. And the other thing too is, like, you know, being able to compete professionally but then move into the sports administration side and take a job at the then ASP was a great way for me to be moving out of pro sports. You know, we hear a lot of professional athletes talking about how hard it is to make the pivot into another career, because you really are in a lot of ways where, you know, you're thinking about yourself in a different way and you're kind of reimagining your identity, which I know you would know as well.
Yeah, like
it can be tricky. So I had this great opportunity to, like, to still drive things through that, like, to still have the drive that I had, but to do it in a different kind of place and setting, because it's hard.
Yeah, it's scary as well. Like, not that I competed on the level you competed on, but I remember when I was like, I just don't think I'm enjoying this anymore. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Am I going to have to go to uni? And just thought my whole life was going to be over. Like, I was going to have to find this new identity. But then when you open your eyes that there's so many different career paths for women in our sport, whether you're in a rashi or not. And that's why I think you are the pioneer for us. Like, obviously you've changed and brought so much good to the sport, but you, to me, paint this perfect picture of, like, it's okay. Like, if you want to leave competitive surfing, it's not the only option. You know, there's so much out there. And then you drove so hard that you became WSL commissioner, which is absolutely insane. The first female WSL commissioner too. So first of all, congratulations. I know you've been it for a few years now, but I've never been able to say congratulations. So congratulations. Take me through that day and just the lead up into kind of how that all came about for you.
Well, I think you say something though that's really important, is that, like, it is okay to stop. And, you know, it's, I think everyone who stops, you kind of know in your heart when it's time, and you just got to listen to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. There's different things that we can do in surfing. It's also okay if you, you know, want to have a, you know, you just want to hang out with your friends and surf recreationally and, you know, have other jobs. Like, it's a big, the thing that I think is important with surfing is it's like, you know, it's an amazing sport because it's so many different things to so many different people. And we've been really fortunate that we've had, you know, someone like myself and you, like, we've had different ways that we've been able to share that love and still engage with it. So, like, it can be hard to find your path, but I think it's okay to be able to say, like, you know, this, there's going to be a path for me in surfing. It might not be this one anymore.
Yeah. It but might I not think, look the way you thought it was going to look, but it's still beautiful no matter where you end up, you know?
Yeah. And we're still here. We're still surfing and But I think for me too, like, I don't know, I ended up, like, I spent a long time at uni. I had come across to the LA office when we had new ownership. New ownership's been really amazing for me on a personal and professional level. I think just having people who've really backed, you know, back to the things, same things that, like, that you want. It always makes such a difference when you have someone championing, you know, the things that you care about. So for me, being here in this American office has been really awesome for me to get to learn from different people, get to see how different how things are done here. I think, you know, just being able to be a part of the tour, and I don't know, like, I will say I didn't have the career goal to be like, I'm going to be the commissioner, you know, like, I've always been someone who set goals on things that have been important to me, but not necessarily, you know, like, positions or like the outcomes. I've always wanted to do like cool things and things that I thought were important. I'm really purpose-based, like, you know, for me to be able to be putting my time and energies into, you know, the things that I really care about, and, you know, getting to work on the tour and work with athletes has been a really big part of that, because, you know, I remember what it's like, you know, to be an athlete and to be trying to find your way through the tour, and, you know, even navigating, you know, with some of our younger surfers and their parents, you know, when I get questions around navigating, you know, the entry systems and, you know, how they should engage with the tours. Like, I always remember my own experiences and, you know, the ways that I would have wanted to be helped and the ways that I would have loved for someone to be there to ask those questions, you know? So those are the things that I've always cared about, and I try and, you know, really, I try and put focus on just remembering what it was like for when we were younger and, you know, the things that would have helped us.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt the support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
Tell me, to break it down, to simplify what you actually do, because I would love to know what a commissioner actually does. What would you say, like, your role objectives are as the WSL commissioner?
So I oversee all of the competitive elements of our tours and, like, the sports integrity. So, you know, all of the competitive elements for all of our tours. So for the men and women, so we've got, you know, we've got longboard, we've got the juniors, we've got qualifying, challenger, CT, all of those things, all of the competitive communications as well. So, you know, all of the info that people get, all of the judging, the integrity part is important as well, because it's like, you know, you want people to see us taking that seriously. And so in some ways it's a little bit of like, if you thought about the division of how we do things, there's like the business side of WSL, which I'm a part of, but there's a competitive side, which is the part that I oversee. So I'll be there and, you know, interacting with surfers for sure. And all of those kind of competitive elements. And the call is a big one that the team does, and the big one in that it's very visible. It's always like a bit of a jigsaw puzzle for us trying to sort those things out and, you know, make sure that we pick the best days that we can. But I guess that's probably the main kind of, it's always hard to explain what you do. Yeah. I always feel like I'm explaining it to my mom or something. But I guess, yeah, that's probably the way I'd say it.
I'm sure there's probably a lot of different like branches and routes that kind of go into your job as well. I would love to talk to you about something that I think you handle really beautifully, and you touched on it before that you relate back to personal things, but it would be the hardest job to be a people pleaser in, because you would have so many different voices, so many different opinions. How do you find kind of navigating and balancing like these? There'd be millions and millions of voices and opinions who'd want to get to you. Is it kind of just you have a small team and you bounce off that, or do you really bounce off the athletes as well?
I enjoy, like, obviously we have a lot of people in the smaller team that are close, but I really enjoy kind of polling in some ways. Like, I find that, you know, a lot of people come and talk to us and will give us their opinions, and it's really interesting to hear all of them, because, you know, we're so close to surfing. I do it all the time. Everything like is that kind of focus. So I think that having people come up to me and tell me their opinions are actually really important. / it's important that you receive the feedback, but it's also important that, you know, you listen, because sometimes you get people coming up to you and saying something that's actually really interesting. And I think for us to be like, no, like, just because you don't know the person, or, you know, the person might be new on tour or something like that, it's definitely an error just to dismiss them, you know, on site. So I think that having so many people come up and chat, you know, especially about the call, like,
yeah,
the call's a really interesting kind of example, because I find that, like, you know, we have forecasters and everything, but there's so many locals who'll come up and just tell us in, you know, coffee shops, because I'm always in them, and they'll be like, you know, they'll be like, oh, you know, I think that, you know, this and this and this, and a lot of them are always right. And what I find with kind of examples like that is, like, the more people that say the same thing is kind of says to me, like, hey, that's something you really should be paying attention to. It's always interesting to hear, like, yeah, what people have to say, I think, yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of, like, good stuff, but you probably get a lot of, like, outrageous thinking thrown at you sometimes as well. But I feel like that's all part of the job. And like I said, I think you navigate it really beautifully. And something else I would like to talk to you about, because you, like I said, have been such a pioneer. You were there for the equal pay, then putting the women back in the waves, like, pipeline. And I want to know about these feelings for you that you've years and years would go into these decisions and these calls being made, even about this equal pay and getting the women back to pipe, like I mentioned. When you see the event like pipe at the start of this year, and it was such a groundbreaking event in 2024, is it kind of like a proud mum moment for you? Like, do you get emotional seeing all this success kind of platter in front of you in the world to experience, where you would have been driving for that for years?
For sure. Like, those, the things like equal prize money and, you know, the events that we had at Pipeline and the performances that the women have, I'm way more proud of those things than anything that I did for when I was competing. And they're not even things that I've done, you know, they were never things for me. And, like, just to get to see those, I'm like, wow, that's, you know, Pipeline this year was amazing. Like, I loved seeing, more than anything, I was so proud to see all of those younger women stand up and be like, oh, this is our chance. You know, this is our time to really take the bull by the horns as such, you know, because we were there for that final day of Pipe. You know, it's the last day of the waiting period. It was a bit bigger probably than people expected. And I was like, oh, wow, like, this is, you know, just to see them all really stand up. Because what I've noticed about the women's tour, which is something that definitely makes me proud, is that they really see the depth of those moments. Like, I'm very aware of, you know, how important those moments are. And so to see someone like a Molly and to see someone like a Katie, you know, on that finals day of Pipe stand up and really take that opportunity, like, I think it says a lot about them as well. Like, it says a lot about the fire that they have and the drive. And I was like, wow, this is, like, better than I could have even thought, you know. Like, you go into those crazy days, and I was, you know, for us, you know, you think about, even if there's a handful of good waves, you know, it's worth those huge moments, because everyone will sit there and go, oh, like, you know, maybe I can do it as well. But, you know, so for Molly and Katie and Betty Lou and everyone to just catch, you know, as this could be going back to back to back. And the day, the thing about that day as well was that, you know, the Beecher pipeline on finals day is always packed. And you had this whole set of a, like the whole crowd is down there and cheering for, you know, the men and the women equally. And, you know, we were trading between the men's and the women's events, and the crowd just got louder and louder and louder. So for those women to have those kinds of like experiences, like I think that when they're old, they're gonna look back and be like, wow, I can't, like, I'm sure they already do, but like those things for sure are like really proud moments. There's so many people, you know, what I've noticed as well is that like, there's so many people who are proud of them. Like it almost belongs to like generations, you know what I mean? There's so many people who come up to me on the street and they'll talk about pipeline, they'll talk about Eagle prize money. You know, I was actually the worst. I'm the worst offender of some of these things. Like I cried on Eagle prize money. I couldn't even talk to people about it. I was really quite shocked. I was shocked at how emotional I was. And I think, you know, you don't even think about it, about the statement and the value, like the statement that it puts about values of your own competition. You know what I mean? Like it was nothing that we were ever going to have. And I never barely even looked at the men's prize money levels because I knew that they weren't for me. Yeah. And so I was really quite shocked at my own reaction. And I was like, yeah, this is why it's so important that like generations to come see that this is just totally the way it is.
Yeah. And it's the way it should be too, you know? And I think that we're the first sport in North America to have Eagle prize money, which is incredible. And it's not like these ladies aren't training as hard as the men or putting the time in or spending the same amount of money to get to these places. So it was such a big win for the sport. Another big win we've just had is that the women's tour is expanding. Congratulations. I was in Taiwan when it happened and I was with Will and I was like, tell me about it. Like, it's not obviously an overnight thing that's just going to come up. This would have been years going into it. 26 women on tour that is going to be coming up next year. 24 women, sorry, I'm getting my years and numbers. Incredible stuff for women in sport. How, it's just another win for you in your career. How does it feel to know that you keep adding to the sport and to the women's journeys?
It's cool. Like, you know, that was a really big one and it's a big one for so many young girls up and coming, you know, to be able to show the pathway and that there's more opportunities. That is a really huge one. And, you know, you think about the performances that we've had this year and all of this current generation, because it's not even really the next generation anymore, but like this generation of young women surfers are like demanding these things. Mm-mm. You know, they're surfing so well. And that's what I've loved about it more than anything is that, you know, you have people like Katie and Caroline and Molly and everyone who is like driving this forward and what they've done this year, you know, even Erin, you know, you have Erin Mahine. Yeah. You know, we had two events won by wildcards this year. And, you know, you look at everything that's happening and it's just like this whole evolution of women surfing. And it's probably, you know, a bit of a revolution for sure.
Yeah.
But they've definitely demanded it with their performances. And I think that that's the best fit is that everyone is like, this needs to happen.
Oh, yeah. Like, I feel like the level they push, like you and your team, like I know you drive a lot, but I assume there's people driving it with you. The level Absolutely. That they push, I feel like you're pushing just as hard. And it's this really cool, like, I don't know, you guys are just in sync at the moment and the sport just seems to be rising. So I feel like you're a massive part of this revolution as well. We also have a bit of a change to the tour. So we're seeing events coming back for 2025. I want to know, I know it's a really broad spectrum question, but at the start of each year, it's kind of hard to know what you're going to expect, but 2025, what are you hoping? What are you thinking you're going to get out of 2025 for the women's tour?
Gosh, I don't know. I feel like every year there's someone who really makes their mark, you know, like I feel like this year, obviously Katie winning, but I feel like Molly at Pipe really like went all out. I'd love to see I think there's a great chance for like someone new to make the final five, especially with it being in Fiji. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think that like, you know, we're going to be qualifying 14 women at the cut for the CT. We had 7 coming off the Challenger. I reckon there's going to be someone that you least expected in some ways, like really kind of stand up there. But I'd love to see, actually, I'll put it out there. I think that we're going to start seeing some of the women do like some crazy airs and things like that. That's what I reckon. Sure. Yeah.
We actually just had the Australian junior titles last weekend, and in the under 18s women final, it was Miller Brown and Isla Huppertz, a 2-man ladies final. In the last minute, Isla needed like an 8.45, went for an air reverse, got a 9.45, and the very next wave, Miller Brown went poof, air reverse again, landed it. And it was just like such a cool moment for Australian junior surfing because it was like 2 airs back to back. Like, that didn't happen in any of the men's heats. Like, it was just the ladies. And I was like,
that's so good.
That is epic. So I totally agree with you on that. I feel like we're just going to see like each year it rise and rise. We have hit our 45 minute mark. I actually could talk to you all day. I literally love hearing what you have to say. I have to know 2 last questions I have for you, Jesse, just because I'm intrigued. You push so hard for the sport and it just seems like each year WSL and you just keep rising and rising. Is there someone in particular that you are inspired by or aspire to that just helps you to keep pushing, keeps you motivated?
I think that this sounds a bit cliche, but I've been really inspired and I take my inspiration from all of the young up-and-comers, you know, especially when you look at, when you think about doing things like expanding the tour and, you know, and these multi-year kind of projects, you know, that we undertake, I always think about all of those people coming up and, you know, how I think that, you know, honestly, I think people deserve these opportunities. So I definitely take my inspiration from them. When I was younger, I really was inspired and was looked after by Kate Wilcombs. She definitely took a, you know, I've always had a lot of energy and was doing things like throwing surfboards, and she's very good at making me realize that I could be a little bit calmer in the way that I, you know, conduct my life, / maybe you don't need to be doing at 1200% every single day. She'd probably be like, I don't know if I was that, you know, successful, but she was also always really, really good for me. I have a lot of gratitude that she looked after me as a junior and kind of through my career, because I think that those kind of things probably may have been a little bit different if Kate wasn't there.
Yeah, it seems like you guys have an incredible relationship. And I think it's so important to have a role model or someone who is there, who kind of feeds it to you. Last question I have for you, and it is a little bit cliche as well, but we started at this young girl at Bronte who had no idea about this journey that was going to go ahead of her. If you had the chance to get down the beach and sit with young Jessie Miley Dyer, what are you saying for her, for young girls who might be the next Jessie Miley Dyer as well?
First thing I will say for sure is that any kind of advice to my younger self probably would have been a waste of breath, because I know younger me wouldn't have listened. But I think that the thing that I'd say to me when I was growing up, if I had the chance, was like, a lot of people are going to tell you no. And a lot of people will tell you that the things that you want to do are not a great idea and that you are 100% right not to listen. You know, like, I think that knowing, you've really got to listen to whatever is that little voice in the back of your mind or like in deep in your gut. Like, if you can tune into really hearing what that has to say, like that's the person and that's the voice to listen to. It's not the other people who are going to give you know the opinions of like, oh, I don't think that your dream and I don't think that the things that you're working for are the right ones.
I love it. Jesse, you are one of my biggest inspirations. You're the reason I wasn't scared to stop competing and find my feet in this whole journalism side of things. So thank you so much for what you do for our sport and what you do for people like me who maybe competitive isn't the end goal, but there's this whole incredible other path for us to take. So thank you so much for all that you do. And ladies and gentlemen, Jessie Miley-Dyer, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess.
Amazing. That's a wrap on our episode with Jessie Miley-Dyer. She's such an incredible asset that we have for our sport. So I hope you loved that podcast episode as much as I did. And that's a wrap for this season, this year on the She's Electric podcast presented by Hyundai. Big congratulations to India Robinson, who took out the She's Electric. It was such an incredible season. And we're looking forward to doing it again next year, guys. Thank you so much for listening to all the episodes this year. We'll be back for some more content next year, but we hope you love all the different opinions and perspectives that we got to chat to over these last 5 episodes, and plenty more to come in the future, guys. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Have you ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.